The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
The FT.
Hello and welcome to this week's Artscast. I'm Jan Daly, the FT's arts editor, and three of the FT's finest are with me today. Nicola Copping, deputy fashion editor, John Lloyd, television columnist, and Peter Aspen, arts writer. And the reason for this particular assembly is that Peter's written a column which is making people quite cross and quite happy simultaneously. He's taken on the issue of Mad Men. He starts his column by saying that the cultural bore of the autumn is the lover of Mad Men, etc., etc. Peter, tell us about why you decided to attack this programme that we all love so much.
Well, I've never felt quite such a party pooper in my life, and I do feel a little bit guilty, I have to say, about it, because Mad Men is clearly a superior television programme. It's beautifully written and beautifully performed and has a lot of class and quality about it. My problem with it is twofold, really. I thought it was a brilliant idea to set it at the time, firstly, and that cusp between the 50s and the 60s, a really interesting, fertile time, and reminded me of one of my favourite movies from the 80s, Barry Levinson's Diner. Also, you get this sense of things changing, and it's a very interesting time. But I was a little bit concerned by people in the office, people around, saying, did you see Mad Men? And instead of talking about what was going on and the characters and the personalities, they did become a little bit obsessed by this style thing, by the suits and the skinny ties and the curvaceous secretaries. And it just made me a little bit uneasy about the whole thing. And the second thing that worried me was we've just started the fourth series, I believe, in the UK here, and things don't seem to have moved very far, and we're supposed to be at 1964-5, and to me nothing much has changed since that first series, and I'm a little bit concerned that maybe the makers of the programme got a little bit too in love with their own sense of style and forgot to move things forward. And the mid-60s was an incredible, clamorous time, and I'd like to see a little bit more of that reflected in the programme.
John, do you think they failed to move it forward?
No, I think Peter's wrong. I mean, one, I think it's great that the piece was written, because I think, especially with Mad Men, because Peter's absolutely right, everybody goes around saying, what a fantastic series, and did you see, and so on. So it's very good to have that, because you then hold up to the light your own assumptions about it, your own conversation about it. Have I just fallen into the trap of agreeing with the common view? So it's good that he wrote that, and it's good that one thinks of it. But I think he's wrong about it not having moved forward, because I think in this series, what's happened to the central character, to Don Draper, is that he's moved into an even lower circle of hell. He's left his wife. He doesn't see his kids very often. He sometimes actually gets so plastered, as he has done recently, that he doesn't wake up in time to see his kids on a previously arranged appointment. He lives in a rather run-down apartment block. He sleeps around quite wildly. He's becoming... and he's less successful than he was. He's no longer the man who immediately thinks of the right idea and immediately wows the clients. He misses some tricks, and he's beginning to cause some worry among his colleagues. So that's moved a good deal from what seemed initially in the first series, in the perfect husband, the perfect wife, the perfect kids, quickly revealed as not that, but still that was the image that he was able to present. Now, increasingly, he presents an image of a man who really is drinking too much, beginning to fail a bit, and beginning to show a kind of inner moroseness. So I think it has moved on, as indeed has the company. The group of ad men have come out of the old company and formed a new one. and are in a kind of a new space. They're much more entrepreneurial, having to be much more entrepreneurial, tout for work more than they used to. And that can be quite poignant, as when Roger, one of the partners, had to dress up, was ordered to dress up as Santa Claus by their principal client, Lucky Strike, who was 70% of their business and who overrode his objections to being Santa Claus, and you then realised that he had no choice but to be Santa Claus. These kind of things, I think, are a different order of existence of the series than there were in the first, second, and even third series.
Do you feel that the personal disintegration of some of these characters mirrors something else? I mean, are we really talking about a supremely confident America, the night of the 1960 election between Kennedy and Nixon, and famously a surprise victory, although of course all the madmen were rooting for Nixon. Indeed, they were paid to organise his campaign, and Kennedy was supposedly the outsider. In the 5 years we've seen, maybe what we're seeing is that actually things were starting to blow in the wind, and that the whole thing that we now call the 60s, which hadn't actually quite got to them yet because they've still all got very short hair, and where what advertising men did not wear by the end of the 60s, I don't think, i.e. the suits and the skinny ties. And we're going to come to Nicola in a minute about the style. But is it all about something deeper happening?
Well, yes, it is. But I'm not sure. You know, I have a problem with the disintegration of Don Draper. Firstly, I don't like him very much. And I know that shouldn't matter, but he's so utterly charmless and boorish.
Women like him, I think.
Women like him, yeah. I concede that.
Back me up, Nicola.
Yeah, you're right, John. Definitely. Like is an understatement.
But I have to say he's matched only by his ghastly wife in unlikability. He was also very beautiful, but vacuous and not that interesting. There were times, certainly in Series 3, when I was actually getting very bored with these very loveless, awful exchanges. But the other thing is, it's quite some time since we've seen Don Draper doing anything good at work. He just seems to blunder on in this sort of reactionary bubble. He doesn't move with the times. It doesn't surprise me that they were supporting Nixon in 1960. And here we are in 65, and you don't really get an impression of this place, and it is advertising people who are supposed to be right on the cutting edge, being very in tune with what's happening in the country, because by 65... a lot was happening. And Peggy, who I find the most interesting character, actually, because of that, the arc of her development, in this series, again, behaving like a kind of 50s teenager about sex and love. And you know, I was reminded the other day that by 1965, John Lennon was singing "I Once Had a Girl," or should I say, "She Once Had Me." There were women doing some fairly forward things already, and it just seems to me a little bit anachronistic. It just unsettles me.
Well, it was a time when famously fashions were changing, I mean, visual fashions. And one of the things that Peter says in this piece, to which he's had a lot of reader response, is something about...
mostly supportive, if I can just...
Oh, sorry, mostly supportive. Mad Men is a programme that is primarily about fashion and the particular fashion that's being celebrated here, the skinny ties, the hourglass figures, and indeed the suicidal drink consumption, which he sees as being part of fashion. Nicola, what's it kind of done for fashion? I mean, once again, do you think that the fashion is somehow deeply embedded in it, so that the fashion is something actually about the America of the time and not just the gloss on the programme?
Well, in answer to your first question, it's had a huge influence on fashion, as I'm sure everybody has seen. Two of the key collections for autumn-winter, the season that we're currently in, Prada and Louis Vuitton, have basically taken Joan Holloway and put her on the catwalk in these sort of quite voluminous 1950s shapes, great cinched waist, okay, huge so
she's
bosoms.
She's the big bosomy one.
She's the big bosomy one, the flame-haired vixen. And
okay, so bosoms on the catwalk.
Absolutely, okay. And this was quite strange because, as you know, fashion is full of very skinny women, and particularly those models. But Marc Jacobs at Louis Vuitton, for this particular show, shipped in the likes of Elle Macpherson, Laura Stone, the model of the moment, who are more buxom, more in that Joan Holloway vein. And in fact, somebody was telling me yesterday that any model that didn't fit into this dress and that didn't have some form of bosom was ejected. So, I mean, in fact, it's quite good for fashion that these sort of more voluptuous girls are getting a show. And, you know, his was one of the most seminal collections of the season, and Prada as well. So it's had a huge effect, and also on menswear. Don Draper was on the front cover of GQ the other day. I've seen his poster on one of the sub-editors' desks as a kind of pin-up boy. And I think men kind of want to dress in that way. There's a sense of professionalism that's returning in terms of sort of male working attire. And he signifies and he epitomises that kind of sort of well-dressed suave elegance that men aspire to look like and women kind of adore.
John, the return of the bosom. Discuss.
I'm glad you asked me about that.
I feel that you might wish to add to that.
I won't, as I should not say, get into that. But although I think Joan is one of these many fascinating characters. I mean, she is, apart from her extraordinary shape, she's like all the characters there, which you rarely find in British drama. She's veined with good and bad. She's trying to save a rather bad marriage. She's often extremely supportive to colleagues. On the other hand, she can be really bitchy and horrible to the secretaries who are below her. And when, in one episode, I think the second series, she went to a party where one of the copywriters had a black girlfriend, and he was throwing the party, she was downright and straightforwardly racist, which brings me back to Peter's point about it being self-enclosed. I think it's right that it is self-enclosed. I mean, he is right, and it is right that it's self-enclosed, because what I think they're trying to do is to say, here's a world which was creating. Here was Madison Avenue in its first great phase of organized manipulation of reality. And Don Draper and the others were pioneers in this. And what it's very good at conveying is the way in which they didn't really need the outside world except for images. I mean, Don watches television and sees something on a kid's show or a film or something that he thinks that can go into a commercial. And what they're doing is showing how, at that time, greater and greater amounts of reality, including politics, but certainly the commercial world, could be, literally in many cases, sexed up. And that, I think, is important. It isn't, I think, a real objection to the series that it doesn't do more civil rights. It doesn't do more about the Beatles. I think the Beatles are mentioned when Don asks his secretary to buy a present for his kid because there's a new Beatles LP or single out or something. So things come in casually a little bit. But it's the world is self-enclosed, and we understand the world better, and the importance of the world, because it became extremely important to us and remains very important to us, how reality is manipulated. You wouldn't get that from something which moved continually out of the rather claustrophobic walls of the advertising agencies into the broader society. Broader society comes in their perception of its usefulness to them as copywriters, as ad men, as madmen, not as something which has to be represented and commented upon.
Yes, the outside world comes in quite obliquely, doesn't it? Yeah. There was one scene recently when they were doing this Lucky Strike campaign, which you mentioned, and they are having for the first time to accept restrictions on what they can do. So they can't have any teenagers smoking, and they can't have any athletes smoking. So they decide that they're going to use bowling, because bowling is a sport, but it's not athletic. And also, apparently, you can't have people looking really, really good when they're smoking. And we're still there. We're still nipping away at categories like that. Peter, what does it really kind of tell us about the America that we all grew up with? This America, this is the America that came to us, really. This was the America that formed our dreams, our movies, our not actually our pop records, because that was an earlier generation, because by then our pop records, thank goodness, were British. But
well, the British invasion has already started. The Beatles reference, it kind of quite irritated me because it was so cute, you know. It was just like, oh, we're so clever, we're not going to talk very much about the Beatles. I dislike that moment.
The likeable bits are dislikeable.
I happened to be in the US when the Beatles invasion started. I grew up there in the early 1960s. And let me tell you, when the Beatles arrived in the US, it was just everywhere. It was unbelievable. I just think it's a little bit self-indulgent just to have one rather flip reference to it. On the other hand, I see the problem. I mean, how can you... It would make it very clumsy. It would be very difficult to bring in the Martin Luther King Freedom March and to bring in Dylan. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard virtually no references to Dylan at all, and you would have thought cutting-edge madmen in the early 60s would know that there was something really quite profound going on.
I guess that was a bit beatnik. I think they were very separate.
But the Don had early on, remember in the first series, Don had a lover. Indeed, the first lover we see is part of that milieu.
I liked her.
And they go to a village cafe of the kind, which Dylan may well have sung in. And I can't remember actually a Dylan reference, but the world was referenced as exotic, but it showed how cool Don was, that he could move into that world, cope with it, and then move back to his own.
Yeah.
Certainly true that the whole civil rights explosion of those 5 years we've seen, 60 to 65, it doesn't seem to have affected them at all, just not mentioned.
In one case, say the copywriter who had a black girlfriend is persuaded by her on pain of separation to go with her down to Alabama and go on a freedom march. And you see, it's just a glimpse of them on the bus with him still grumbling that he'd rather be in the office. Mm-hmm. And she's saying, putting some spite. But you don't see the freedom march. You don't see the consequences of it. You just see them going. So it is, as you say, it's oblique. And it comes in little spurts here and there. Mm-hmm. As I think it might have done in any enclosed world. After all, these were probably Republican voting, highly paid executives.
They
would regard it, if not as something deviant, at least as something a bit, it's not our world.
Mm. Well, the South was a very long way away from Madison Avenue. I mean, it wasn't cool for it to be
integrated. I guess what I'm saying is censorious. I'm just a little bit impatient. I admire a lot of the subtlety of Mad Men, and God knows we need it in television writing. And as you say, compared to British dramatic television writing, it's streets ahead of anything. But, makes me think of John Updike's first two Rabbit books, which take place, of course, in 1959 and 69, and the extraordinary difference in those two universes. And we're now, with Mad Men, about halfway between those.
Between 59 and 69.
Roughly. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder whether when and how we're going to get to that very different moral universe of the late 60s. I look forward to it.
Well, I think Don has got to grow his hair a little bit over his ears, because we're out of time. We're going to have to wrap up. We'll just have one final word on the really important thing, which is the frocks. Nicola, is it going to stay like this? I mean, are women going to be allowed to be more curvy because of...
I think so. This season, definitely. And look at somebody like Roland Murray, who is famed for those really sort of sculpted, curvy dresses. The one that I can see in front of me that Joan Holloway was wearing, there is an exact spin-off of that dress in his collection this season. So yes, for the moment, and I have to say for the moment, because fashion changes very, very quickly, hourglass is in.
Well, that's something. Thank you all very much, Peter, John and Nicola. Thank you all very much for listening, and join us again soon on the Arts Podcast.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.